Good day to you and to all. This is More Talk Radio on KBOO, your community radio station. 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis and Albany, KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web. And this is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we are broadcasting on April 16th, 2016. And I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Celeste Carey, as she continues to navigate morning traffic in Portland. But in the meantime, we will share with you and those who are listening that this is a call-in program, and we invite callers to call in. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Now, as we record this broadcast, this is Monday, the day after Pride weekend. The former head of the FBI gave an interview on broadcast television at the beginning, I assume, of a major book tour and promotion. I'm talking about his time at the FBI and his firing by the president and his views on the current administration. And also his reflection on his tenure at the as the head of the FBI. There's something that I mentioned that I'd be interested in people's reflection, but we might veer off of that and talk more about pop culture. And what we are talking about this morning is how pop culture reflect and maybe also direct our national conversation and our national ability to reflect on who we are as a nation. Certainly since the election of President Trump in November of 2016, one popular reflection has been of the triumph of the white working class, and maybe triumph is too strong of a word, but how that became the base of the president's support and how the president continues to cater to a segment of a white working class, and that most of the established political party, both the Democrats and the Republicans, were unable to tap into that angst, and President Trump was able to do so, that led him to his election and ability to govern from, I'm not sure how to characterize his political philosophy. Nevertheless, that becomes a talking point in much of the media, and whether or not there is something we should explore more in terms of looking about the inability to join together poor and working people across racial lines in this nation. One popular reflection of that has been a broadcast television program, which is the reboot of a program from the 80s. And in it, the major character talks about, I believe, her support of the president, while her sister was a supporter of the major Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton. And that, I suppose, is a nutshell of some conversations that are taking place in families, and whether or not that happens in your families or whether or not that's a good model is something we might explore more. I'm talking about, I failed to mention the program, is the reboot of the show Roseanne. I believe a couple of episodes, two or three episodes, have been broadcast, and apparently it's an enormously popular show and lots of ratings and stuff like that. But it's also, as I think, a time to reflect on whether or not, one, it's an accurate portrayal of working class people, particularly white working class, and whether or not it is a vehicle to have more in-depth, certainly not only conversation, but also analysis of where we are as a nation. If you have experienced the reboot of that program and have any opinions on how it portrays the America today, or any thoughts, certainly we want your opinions and your thoughts, and they are certainly welcome here at 503-231-8187. And perhaps to widen the conversation, to talk also about whether or not we are at this point in our nation to begin to delve not only with the angst of people, but to examine the political, social, and economic positions that we find as a nation. There are much that continues to happen, and I believe that we are in a position as a nation where we are grappling with what it is or where we are. And for those who of us who continue to oppose the direction of the national administration, how do we stop this mad race to a place we do not want to be? Some of that was reflected, I think, by the interview of James Comey last night, and in which he gave his analysis on the character of the president and the direction that the president is leading this nation. I'd also be interested in your reflection if we were able to hear the interview last night, and whether or not his analysis was similar or different than your analysis. So let's reflect on the state of the nation as we approach the time in which we all should file our taxes. And by the way, for those who live in Portland, I'm just curious, the number of people who pay their art tax. I suspect that's something that most people, many people ignore. I don't know. Give us a call on these thoughts, on Roseanne the reboot, James Comey, his reflection, and have you paid your art tax if you live in Portland, Oregon? Let's go to our first caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hey. So that whole Roseanne reboot, I was a fan of it when I was younger, maybe just because I didn't know any better, but I really feel like, ever since Roseanne started, I'm really critical of outspoken Trump supporters only because of the fact that where he sits is not really a political position, especially when you consider the outspoken support by the white nationalist community. But one thing that people really like to point to in terms of what in terms of what the show is talking about, they always want to talk about that one kid who's supposed to be like queer and how Roseanne accepts him, you know, like their relationship and whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really interesting relationship because my grandmother was white. I'm Mexican, Mexican American, mm-hmm. Chicano, however you want to say it. And my grandma was white, and she was very racist, and she was very critical of Mexicans, except when it came to me.
Right.
And I always thought that dynamic was really interesting, but it's really, really interesting to see it play out on national television because, you know, I relate a lot to that because that's how my grandma was. Like, she was accepting of me, but of no other Mexicans. She thought Mexicans were one of the biggest problems we had as far as illegal immigration, but whenever she talked about Mexicans, I'm like, well, Grandma, what about me? And she's like, well, you're different.
Yes, you know, and that reminds me, you know, of some people who said in terms to change people in terms of racism, that once you get to know someone who's different, so whether it's, you know, someone of a different race or someone of who's queer, you change. But that then you'll be able, you either somehow magically have right politics. But as you suggest, I'm sure your grandmother loved you dearly. But you were the exception to her whole worldview.
Exactly. And that's really like what really bothers me about the show is that it's trying to humanize an inhumane position.
Mm.
You know, I mean, and granted, you know, I'm very critical of the Democratic Party because they didn't really, it was just a huge push for white feminism that whole election. I mean, I would love to see a woman president, but it was like they were really trying to push Hillary, and the fact that they colluded with each other to push Bernie out of the standings was really, and not that I was a huge fan of Bernie either, but to see the way the Democratic Party imploded when it didn't go the way that it wanted to, especially concerning a traditional Democratic candidate, that was a huge problem for me.
Yeah.
And we need more, and we have people who don't work, I mean, people don't work in terms of dichotomies or dualisms, you know. We like to think that there's one or the other. There's heaven or hell, Democratic, Republican, gay, straight. But life is a spectrum, and we need political parties that reflect that spectrum.
Right.
And, you know, especially when you're considering black and brown people whose lives are anything but dichotomies. You know, as Chicanos, we're Native people trying to live in our ancestral land that was stolen. It's the same thing with other Native Americans up here. We're trying, we've tried our best to assimilate into whiteness, but to no avail. We've tried it for years, but still we have people in our community who tell us if we just adopt these mainstream views and stop fighting so much with white majorities, kind of what, you know, but we'll be accepted and everything will be fine. But generation after generation has shown us nothing of that progress. And, you know, especially now with Trump being president, I mean, our vulnerability as a community is even greater than it was before.
Right.
Because Trump is not a traditional candidate in any sense of the word. He doesn't play by the same rules that conservatives and Democrats have always played by.
Well, let me ask you, because you raise a lot of important points right here in terms of interpreting the national scene. And particularly I want to talk about a couple of other points. One was in terms of the untraditional way in which Trump plays, and also about, and these are my words, not your words, in terms of how should we promote intersectionality as opposed to this sort of dualism?
Well, as far as intersectionality, we have to stop thinking of intersectionality as this cross street where people intersect, although that is a part of it. The way that I look at it is imagine yourself in a picture window and imagine intersectionality as where lines cross in front of that window.
Uh-huh.
And So if you're white and a woman, you only have two slats against you, really. One slat, if you really think about it, because whiteness is a privilege. But yes. Intersectionality, the more lines you cross, the harder it, the more slats come across the window. And the harder it is to see you and to be able to label you and to be able to look at you, at least through a traditional dualistic lens of politics.
Okay.
So what we need to do, like I said, is we need to create political parties that reflect the spectrum in which people live, because you know, I hear a lot of people being upset that, you know, we took a lot of rumors about emails over, you know, even worse facts about a person. But the truth of the matter is that for a lot of people of color, it wasn't about emails. I mean, we look at how the Clinton Foundation handled things in Haiti. You know, we look at how the, you know, we look at how, you know, the Clintons in when Bill was in office, how they were, how they took that tough on crime stance that really brought, the mass incarceration to a new level for kind of for black and brown communities.
I'm gonna dig down even deeper and jump in real quick and bring up one that one of our regular callers brings up, and that is black fears of being replaced and being marginalized even further by new immigrants, by new people of color. And so I think that we have to realize that there are a lot of concerns that were not met by any of the organized groups. Now, I do want to say one thing, though. Bernie Sanders did not endear himself to the black community by any means. And I say that in terms of the wide, broad spectrum of the black community, not with narrower margins or narrower audiences. And when I say that, I'm talking about having that kind of distancing approach he took to critical issues coming out of the black community when it revolved around political disenfranchisement or social disenfranchisement. And it came to a head with the Seattle campaign stop with Black Lives Matter. Now, regardless of whether Black Lives Matter is a George Soros group or not, you know, it still addressed issues that were very near and dear to the heart and soul of many black people up and down the economic, educational, and national spectrum, our nationality. And so by not addressing those, it left room for, and I can't believe the word smarmy just popped into my mouth really quickly, but smarmy tactics like what happened with Trump. I mean, mm-hmm. that's it. And it's a hoodwink, and that's one of the reasons why, although Cecil wanted to speak about James Comey, I want to kind of interject about the way we are being, I'm going to say it, programmed to respond to these kinds of dynamics by the program shows that we watch on TV. But I think you brought up a lot of points, just too many. It, you know, the problem is our tapestry of ugly, it's dense.
Absolutely.
It's dense, you know. And if you pull one thread, you find out it's connected to another, or maybe there's all one just multicolored thread of ugly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's the one thing that definitely that's, I mean, Bernie Sanders had a huge opportunity to really set himself apart in that respect, but he took the same road that all white liberals take.
Yes.
And that's to protect the white feelings. And that was a huge mistake, because, I mean, we can gather around dogs getting beaten in YouTube videos. We can gather around so many different issues that don't center around race, and we can treat them with such compassion. But when it comes to race, there's this huge guilty block that keeps us from really tackling that. And like you said, if we start pulling on the strings of race, and we don't start pulling on the threads of current issues, we start pulling at the very fabric of the foundation of this country. And
well, now I hate to cut you off there, but we got, it looks like, a full buffer. You're bringing up good points.
Oh.
And we're going to end up cheating everybody else because you're bringing up good points. So,
okay, no, it's all right.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you
thank
for
you
your
so
call.
Much.
No problem. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
You too. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste, and I am Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And, you know, I said I'm James Comey, and you said Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the thing that happened this weekend that everyone should be aware of is...
Say it.
Beyonce. Beyonce.
No, I'm just laughing.
Oh, okay.
I'm laughing because one of the things that I'm doing in my various stages of convalescence here is reading a lot from, you know, politics to pop culture. And I succumbed to pop culture's pull, its gravity. Its gravity of being a black hole that really just spews you further down into a rabbit hole of nonsense. I actually tried to find out who bit Beyonce on the face. I really had tried to get past that. And now here it is. It was the main event of the weekend, something with Beyonce, huh?
Yeah.
I missed it.
First black woman to headline Coachella, and with this homage to black culture and HBCUs, she was,
well
okay. I wasn't there. I didn't see it.
But. I didn't see it. And that's one of the few things where I give certain aspects of homage to pop culture. And, you know, I give her points. She ain't Queen Bey, although I'm sure there's people who, you know, would call me out for that, you know. No, she's not only Queen Bey, but she's Queen B-A-E and Queen for the day.
Right.
You know, every day.
But, the queen of TV apparently is
well, a returning queen is Roseanne, but not with the same fanfare. But I don't want to delve into some of the more divisive aspects of the show. This is what I'm gleaning from the show, and I want to use it as we talk about issues like you did with how do we process and receive the news from James Comey, you know, about our current administrative team. And the thing that I want to pull from Roseanne is this. Only this. There is, in this country right now, a market effort to shut down conversation. To destroy bridges of civility, to get us stuck in our own little camps, to keep us from building sky bridges of imagination and diplomacy.
Yes.
And I characterize them as sky bridges because they are high above the fray, and they are where our loftier ideas live, or at least should try to live. And, you know, and they're even sabotaging elevators, escalators, and stairs up to those high sky bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And it is our duty as thinking beings, sentient beings, along with, you know, plants and the flora and fauna, you know, to not only fight that, but to aid each other in not letting these bridges be broken down. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to take a small positive that comes out of the fact that Jackie and Roseanne are oppositionally positioned regarding their politics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the fact that it's, you know, Jackie has to be neurotic and flighty and worried and anxious and Chicken Little and all of this stuff to Roseanne's more truculent and bullish verbiage and dynamic. Except that it makes it easier for me to let Roseanne be the caricature of her political position that she is, that she's mm-hmm. made herself, she's played herself.
Right.
You know, but my point is this. We got to talk. That is the one thing out of that whole show that we should focus on, is that within the family, they are trying to talk. Now, I don't think this show speaks for the working class the way it used to. For her to espouse Trump politics and policies, in my view, is counterproductive, dishonest, trying to normalize it and would actually be the anathema, or I can speak English and say the death of the Conner family, because Trump just signed a bill saying people on welfare need to work, as if people on welfare weren't working.
So let's hear what some other people have to say, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thanks.
Hi. So it sounds like between the two of you, you're talking sort of about intersectionality, Comey, Roseanne, and I guess the past election.
Well, more about communicating, too, sure. You know, because even with Comey, communications is a key thing, because I think one of the reasons— and, okay, this might be the conspiracy theorist to me. One of the reasons Comey said that he, you know, he released the emails is because he thought that Clinton was going to win. Hillary was going to win.
Right. She, you know, she did win by 3 million votes.
Actually. Right. But I have the opinion that Trump already knew that something was going on. He wasn't quite sure how it was going to play out yet. And so that didn't take him by surprise. Didn't take Trump by surprise at all. It just took other people by surprise.
Sure. Well, I think a longtime documentary filmmaker, Michael Moore, came out with a film and said, you know, Trump may win, even and the polls may be wrong. And
right.
At least some of us who are paying attention, that Trump was very successful, not to dwell on the last election, but that he was very successful and surprised people all along that he kept winning and defeated whatever, 17 traditional Republican candidates. And
right.
if he did
right.
that, as long as he was on the ballot, that meant he had a shot at actually prevailing and tying into kind of the, what would you call it, the racist, sexist, anti-intersectionality things that, at least as a politician, Roseanne, as the most prominent probably Trump supporter in the country, seems to support. I guess I was going to ask about future stuff that's coming up in terms of intersectionality, censorship, and local elections. Mm-hmm. Specifically, if either of you happen to see, which I did, I haven't ever met him, and I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his name, Steve Duin, D-U-I-N. He's an Oregon columnist. But he had a column this weekend about the upcoming city council election, and it didn't quote Roseanne, and it didn't necessarily quote Trump, but it was basically promoting one of the white female candidates, saying she's a woman of convictions, Felicia Williams. She's running against Joanne Hardesty, Loretta Smith, Andrew Valderrama, and Stuart Emmons. So in that particular race, there's three women of color, one sort of conservative, Loretta, a couple that are, Joanne at Portland State, we support Joanne Hardesty, but Andrea Valderrama works for the mayor and seems to be kind of a little bit better than some of the other candidates, maybe except for Joanne. And then there's two white people, Felicia Williams and Stuart Emmons. And this particular Steve Duin column said that people should absolutely be voting for Felicia Williams. It was 50 paragraphs long. We'll try to write a response to it and see if it gets printed. But he basically said, without quite saying it this way, which I think is intentional, there should be more white people in office. And so that seemed to tie in. That's a tie-in to Charlottesville, ties into Trump. He basically said it's a false criteria to say that it's time for a woman of color, three of the candidates, being on city council. I think statistically in 150 years in Portland for city council, there's been two African-American city councilmen, and if counting Chloe, who just got elected a couple years ago, maybe seven women in 150 years. So I think it would be really helpful to have Joanne on, and she's the best candidate. But having known Felicia Williams with Downtown Neighborhood Association for 7 years, I would say she's the worst candidate. I just found it interesting that Steve Duin decided, well, here's something. You know, the Oregonian's getting less and less popular. So not that many people are reading it, but in terms of local mainstream media. So I don't know if either of you had seen that yet.
No, I hadn't seen it. And I confess, I don't read the Oregonian as much as I used to. The journalism might have been good at one point, and I applaud several journalists that I knew that used to write with it and were part of the release program, I guess I call it. But I didn't read it. But here's the thing about Steve Duin. To ignore the fact that the conversation is trying to be broader, just saying we need some colored people on the council, you know, and make it divisive, he's trying to add that element in there in a negative fashion, as you've pointed out. And I think it's really important for us to remember that that's the status quo here and not let it be normalized and keep bringing it up like you are. And I think that whole communications thing is kind of where I'm coming from with Roseanne, because the show itself, there's lots of bones I would pick with it. I would. But I'm not going there, because I glommed on that one part of communication, and I realized that it is a nexus in so much of what's going on right now, is that we are not getting good, forthright, honest, transparent, to the point, accurate, information. We're bombarded with fake information, fake news, whatever we want to call it.
I'm just glancing at this article, and it's puzzling. Well, it's not puzzling, but it's just sort of like, here's the last two paragraphs. You may think Portland is overdue for a talented woman of color on the council. As luck would have it, two, Valderrama and Hardesty, are running. But William is smart, involved, and eminently qualified. Mm-hmm. You might want to spend a couple of hours listening to her, too. If she's one of the top two vote-getters in May's primary, will likely spend several months listening to two candidates with dramatically different perspectives on the future of the city. And, I'm certainly can't and don't endorse any candidate, but it just got... it's just interesting.
Rubbed it the wrong way.
Yeah, it says, if you want a progressive person, mm-hmm. There's two women of color, but there's also this other woman who's smart, involved, and eminently involved, as if that, I don't know, just rubs
as
me
if
the
wrong other,
way.
It, really what it's saying is, progressive, Portland's really white, we need to fix that. But here's the person you need to vote for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it was. Dog whistle media.
Yeah,
so
he also specifically says in there, and I'll let you go, that he wants a conservative woman of convictions, and that's Felicia.
Yes. Williams,
mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, it means she supports Trump. It means that in our experience at Portland State, and I've been to Downtown Neighborhood Association meeting, mm-hmm. which Felicia was chair of. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was on the board for a while. I got elected to it. Is that she specifically trashed in meeting after meeting a black homeless guy named Bobby, Grace, who's a volunteer at KBOO on disability stuff, and Shannon, who's an older white grandmother who was low income, and she kind of wanted condo owners more. In fact, according to the Oregonian, different article, the main donor to Felicia's campaign is one $40,000 contribution from her business partner, significant other, according to the story. Anyway, thanks for letting me talk. Bye.
Oh, well, thanks for bringing it up.
Okay, and I just wanted to say again, we can't endorse any candidate.
Nope.
So that was one caller sharing their perspective.
And I would like to say I will endorse this about the elections and the candidates and the issues. Do your homework.
Yeah.
Do your research. Talk to people who have the same values as you do. Listen to people talking about the different values than you do.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know where you're going. Whole conversation is about dialogue. So, I'm going to say
right.
it both.
Okay,
but
so.
Notice I said listen, because it's really important that we listen to everybody. And again, that was the one thing that I'm pulling out of this whole issue with Roseanne, is to listen.
So you don't, it sounded as if you had some concerns with the program because of how they characterize the conversation, or you don't think it's a good model of having
I think the model that of Jackie and Roseanne's inner dynamics is dysfunctional. I mean,
that's
how they got rich.
Yes.
But and it doesn't do a lot that 20 years later they're still, as Miles Davis said, wearing them same bell bottoms.
Yeah. But the thing that I thought was in the mm-hmm. program, which I don't know in different families, in terms of they remain a unit with diverse political opinions, or at least on the presidential candidacy. And I don't know how many people or families are like that, or at least in continued dialogue. I was talking to some people today who mentioned, you know, they don't know anyone of, you know, the other political, of another political spectrum. And so, as you were suggesting, in terms of the city council race, to talk with people and listen to people of different opinions, one thing that I think I admire about that program is that within the same household, you have people of diverse political opinion who remain in dialogue with one another. And maybe that's what I admire. But I don't know. Do people have in conversation with families and friends who are, you know, because we are in such camps, in meaningful conversation and dialogue with people who are different than us?
Well, you know, we've been talking about intersectionality, and I think that's a good way to start to try to answer that now. And I think all of us will find that we have avenues to travel to those high sky bridges I talked to about earlier. Yes. I look and in trainings I've done both here at KBOO and in other places, with other entities, I view intersectionality and I approach it a slightly different fashion. And let me see if I can cram about 5 minutes of deep psychology into 30 seconds here. Or I meant, you know, five centuries. Okay. Basically, to be able to connect as a civilization all the way down to the building block of civilization, which is a family, one of the key characteristics we need to have is empathy. Okay, being able to understand and feel each other, being able to stand alongside and share an emotional bond, a mental bond, a visual and visional bond, et cetera, okay, and have those multitude of invisible connections. One of the best ways to develop empathy is to realize how much you have in common with people. So intersectionality also can be used to show people how they have connections to groups that they don't normally see themselves as belonging to. Yes. So, for example, when I was doing the beloved community training here at the radio station, I developed a couple of exercises to kind of help with that, where I would have people identify visually so that everyone else could see it, and so they could internalize and visceralize it, how they fit into a catalog of identities that I would read.
Yes.
And then I would ask those who had most of their marks in the more privileged area of the spectrum, I explain what that felt like, realizing that, you know, on that apex, they were on top. What do they felt like they were called to do? Why didn't they feel they were called to do anything if they were? Talk about, you know, the process, to whom much is given, much is expected. And then have them listen to what it's like to be someone who is on the other end of the spectrum, maybe even the opposite end of the spectrum, antipodal to them.
Yes.
So it's really important that we try to flip this idea of identity politics so it works for us, not that it works us. One of the strong points of our concern with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica is that Cambridge Analytica mined our personalities via Facebook and the web, and took our values and found subtle ways to turn us against our values and our beliefs, which also meant break down those sky bridges of empathy, because it helped us isolate and be polarized in places. So even though I think Roseanne can be a brainwashing tool, you know. Brainwashing doesn't work, though, if you stay vigilant and you watch how you respond to things and you nip the ugly in the bud. But you can learn something by looking at the tool. People who want to tell you how the trap runs should be listened to. When you get a chance to see behind the curtain and see the wizard, you should look, you know. Mm-hmm. You should take notes. And then you should compare notes with your friends about what you've seen. Mm-hmm. You know, because basically what has happened is for a brief moment, the curtain flew back, and we saw just in that one instance of Roseanne, they were promoting something that was a positive thing, and you've already articulated it, and that's families sticking together while having contentious politics. Hmm. And I think that's the one thing that I kind of rude in hearing a lot of my progressive and liberal friends call people who are sometimes my conservative friends or family members stupid or idiots or whatever because they voted for Trump rather than really listen to them and understand their fears. Because when Michael calls up and he's making sense, I love listening to him. But when he calls up and he starts talking about how immigrants are illegal and, you know, and they're not even human beings and whatever like that, then, you know, I have to remind him, you are missing a point of your own personal intersectionality because you forgot, as far as the Constitution is concerned, you're not human. You know, I'm not human. So why are we not humans trying to make other people not human rather than all of us not humans gaining our humanity?
Wow. So how do we engage in those type of meaningful, difficult conversations?
I like the way you
within,
said difficult.
Within our sphere. And are we in conversation with those who are different than us? Who is your, what's the character's name? Roseanne's sister?
Jackie. Mm-hmm.
So who is your Jackie and who is your Roseanne in your world? And do you able to engage in those type of conversations?
And it would be good to hear from people who have those kind of successful dynamics. I mean, married partners, I think, is a fascinating one. You know, when you're married to somebody, maybe the person you're married to and you love has either revealed themselves to be a bigot or over time has become one, or over time has decided not to be a bigot and you're not ready for that. Or, you know, I say that, you know, just to add levity. I say it that way to add levity, not to denigrate. You know, and how do you deal with it? And, you know, the conversations we're having about Comey and what he has to say about Trump, they're all important, but it can't be us preaching to the choir. We have to find a way to get the message outside of this arena and into the larger sphere and be aware that there actually might be some people on the other side trying to do the same thing.
Right. Our numbers are 503-231-8187.
Yeah. So tell me some more about what you thought of James Comey's interview.
I don't know. I thought it was interesting in that he also shared his concern about the and he was quite deliberate and specific in terms of the president's failures by not only by talking about his moral leadership, which I thought was interesting and not that I disagree with, but I was more interested and Jake gave hints in terms of the president, what might have been the president's legal missteps. He talked about you know, what he said was the president's very careful way of asking him to be a team player.
Mm-hmm.
And also in terms of an investigation, as well as he also gave an insight that he did not want the president. He hoped the president would not be impeached, because if the president would be impeached, that would be letting the American public off the hook.
For doing what, or for not doing what?
He thought it. He should be. The American people should express themselves through the voting box. So he thought that by going into the voting booth and showing your disagreement with him, he thought I'm adding some things to what I think he was saying.
So
he thought it was the most cleaner and better way to change the person in the White House. And I don't disagree, because impeachment, as my understanding, as it was designed, was to be something, an extreme situation, an extreme matter. Typically very difficult to impeach a president. It is interesting, in the last
50 years,
we had two presidents who were impeached. Mm-hmm. And some might argue that the last president who was impeached, President Clinton, that was more of an easy way to let your political disagreement out, rather than high crimes and misdemeanor, I think is the terms in the Constitution. It was more like, we don't like Clinton, and this is how we're going to get rid of him. My thought. Let's go to
your thoughts.
Callers.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, caller. Thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Francis.
Hi, Francis.
I agree with you totally about the conversations needing to be had. And one thing, I hadn't watched the Roseanne show, and then I talked to my younger son, and he said he watched it, and he said it's still funny. And they still have the conversations that need to be had. And then I learned that Wanda Sykes is one of the head writers for the
Well,
show.
There's debate about that, because she's not listed, and there's an ongoing raging debate on theroot.com
over
that.
Whether or not
that.
She is.
Yes.
Or not.
Yeah, you might check out theroot.com, and that would be an interesting read itself.
Okay. And then one thing about this man that is president right now that is a dynamic that is very interesting to me is he has lifted up the rug, all the stuff that has been shoved under the rug for
mm-hmm.
years and years and years. It's all stuff all out there for all of us to see,
mm-hmm.
and we just have to figure out what we're going to do about it.
If we're going to do anything
thing,
about
actually.
It.
Yeah, well, but I think people are trying to figure that out right now, and the conversations are being had, mm-hmm. which is interesting. It's all out there.
Right.
And we'll see how it goes here. Hopefully, wisdom will prevail.
Okay, I like that.
Right.
Hey, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
That must be me.
Yes,
yep.
It is you.
Well, good morning. I guess I'll comment on a bunch of the things that you said. First, I think the business of Trump, so much of it boils down to simply that the president is a jerk. And it is, I don't think the morality is not much more complicated than that. He just talks like the low-brow kind of guy you'd meet next to you in a bar, and I think a lot of people find that appealing. They get tired of all those highfalutin liberals and intellectuals of the right and the left, and this guy, hey, he talks like us. Isn't it great that he can be president? Let's vote for him. At any rate, he is a jerk, and I guess people are waking up.
But I don't think, I don't know, but I guess he's probably not the first jerk who has been president.
Yeah, but the, I guess Dixon might have come close, but in terms of his behavior, I mean, uh-huh. I mean the way he tweeted, the way he dismissed his Secretary of State, I mean, who would do that to any employee? That's just the work of a jerk. Anyway, let that go aside. I appreciate the discussion about the TV program. One of my criticisms of NPR radio is that they spend so much time talking about the new sitcoms and this and that. It's almost as if it's news. It reminds me of when that guy was running for vice president, he got confused and he treated these people as if they were real people. Well, they're actors and it's a program. And so as much as I appreciate your, I hope we don't do too much of getting us to watch TV because I don't want to watch the program.
I didn't say anything about watching the program.
Yeah, I understand.
I haven't even seen it yet. If at all. No, I'm talking about the dynamic of talking to each other. And that's the one thing good that I have seen and heard so far that I want to emphasize.
I appreciate that. And there were programs that did that so well. And I'm the kind of guy, I speak to a lot of people, and I love a lot of people who happen to vote the wrong way. And so But I get out and talk, and a lot of people don't. I'm not so insular. But anyway, about the city council election, I know you can't take a position, but wouldn't it be possible to invite callers to come in to call in and talk pro and con and the different people and that they support or don't support on?
I imagine somebody's planning a show like that. Everybody doesn't do it because everybody basically wants to cover the things that fall within their show format range. And if it's presented to programmers in a compelling manner, somebody may pick it up. But I know that we usually have shows that try to balance it and reach all of the candidates.
We have had and probably will have you know political debates with the candidates.
Yeah,
because stay tuned.
I really like one of the candidates, and I just really, really like one of the candidates, and so I hardly know anything about the other candidates, and the only way I'd hear about them would be to hear people speak for them, and maybe something besides the debate, inviting callers to call in and speak and maybe push the bushes a little bit to make sure that you get callers from.
Right. Well, I think that's great, and I would ask you just to call our office and talk to our news directors and
AM and PM news directors.
And talk about those ideas, and the numbers there is 503-231-8032.
Oh, okay, will do. Okay. You'll be blessed. Mm-hmm. Thanks for a good program.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we'll go to our next caller. So, you know, I think there's a couple of things that are coming out of this. One is, we do have a caller?
We do have a caller.
Oh, okay.
We have a caller?
Oh, okay, we do have a caller. Okay.
Good morning, caller.
It's you.
Yeah, you know, first of all, man, on that last guy, you know, the historical people in the black race, like Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, them kind of guys, they have not came out publicly and called Trump a racist. Now there's a role reversal going on now, because historically black people are the ones that come out and call people racist. But now white folks, since Donald Trump is in office, now white folks are coming out calling him racist. Now, how come Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton haven't called him a racist?
That's a good question.
What do you think? Why not?
Well, because I've done research on Trump. Trump used to be in the fight game.
That's true.
And so when Trump was in the fight game, I've seen Trump hanging out with Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, a lot of those black civil rights leaders way before he became president. I don't think he's a racist. I think he has never came out and talked against black people. I mean, especially since he's been president, he's talking about illegal immigrants.
Oh, he's talking about a lot black about people. Black people.
So, do you do recall the in New York in the I think 90s where it was these young black teenagers who were accused of
wilding
and beating this woman, and Trump used his microphone to call for their execution. You know, mm-hmm. they were, you know, later seeing that they were innocent and eventually freed from prison. But Trump continued to call for their execution. So he certainly has a history of racist acts in New York.
And it's not limited to black Americans. He called African countries cockahole countries.
Oh, thank you.
And it's like, what in the world? And didn't feel a need to walk it back. Did not feel a need. He really has a way of talking about black folks as though, like, yeah, black folks, I like them. I like to wipe my feet on them. I like to eat them barbecued. I like them. You know, he does not care about us. He just recently signed some changes in welfare that are going to hurt a lot of people of color.
Well, it's going to hurt a lot of people, period. I mean, in terms of he wants people to get up and work. But, you know,
but they are working, Mike.
Bill Clinton, he hurt a lot of black people, too, because he came out with the war on crime.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, and Bill Clinton, you know, talking about the welfare, he was the one who made a change in that system.
He sure did.
So that
he started that whole mess.
So he dismantled welfare as we knew it. So it's right now it is you have to work, and there's a limit in terms of how long you can even get it.
If you are working.
Working, yeah. But yeah, that's, Bill Clinton.
That's just one last thing. You know, when I talk about illegal immigrants, you realize that during slavery, when Africans were escaping the South, going up north and going to Canada,
mm-hmm.
Mexico wouldn't accept them. That's why in history you have never heard about slaves.
I need to check that, Mike. You know, I've heard people say that, but I've also seen it debunked. Because you got to remember that there were slaves taken to Mexico as well.
And, you know, I'm just so grateful that the slaves who were welcome into Canada, they didn't throw them out as illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
but
remember, this an immigrant is a person, though, Michael. That's the main thing that I'm talking about. You know, it kind of, because you and I can disagree on a lot of things, but when you call people what amounts to refuse, that burns me, because it's like I said in one of our other conversations, you believe in God and they're made in the image of God, so there's a disconnect here. Literally.
I think he left.
He might have.
Oh, okay. Well, always enjoy conversation with Michael and with all the callers, and I think the fact is, you know, we encourage callers and conversations, and I guess one of the themes this morning was in endorsing more conversations, to be willing to cross the lines of difference and engage more in that meaningful conversation. It's difficult sometimes, though.
It is difficult. I mean, as we just demonstrated here on Talk Show, we're going to have different ideas. But, you know, do your research. And try, when I say do your research, try to find competing or at least broad sources of information. Don't rely on something like Fox News, because they lie. That's not even fake news. That's just lie.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh.
But you know what? KBOO tries to tell the truth. Stay tuned to us. Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
That was true. None of them work at all.
Thank you, KBOO members, for supporting this great station, and you can apply today to join our board of directors to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to great use. The role played by our KBOO Board of Directors is essential, It's a great way to become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application or stop by.